think that's about all, so we might as well get started. Robin Quayle and I, last year about this time, and Sherry McCord sitting over here, we three of us brought Bill in last February, had a real good turnout, and we decided to do it again this year. Robin and I have been talking with Bill for over the past several months, and we found out that he's got a lot of brand new material that you people, if you were through the one last year, it's going to be the new material. And one of the things he said last year, he said he was going to touch from kindergarten to about the fourth grade last year. And it made some people mad, but yet made them mad enough to allow him to come back. Now, this year, he told me the other night, he said we're going to hit from about the seventh grade to the tenth grade, so we're into junior high. So maybe in two more years, we'll be at the high school or college. So this is some of the things. Bill spent about 7 years in naval intelligence, and he'll get into a little bit about what he did in there. And then he spent the last 17 years putting together what he is going to share with us this afternoon. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Bill Cooper.
Amazed when they do it. There are people here today who were at my told them. They were very skeptical, and have since become helpers in our crusade because they went out and looked at what's available. Most of the evidence is in the public domain. It's there for anyone to find. That's where I found it. That's not how I got started on it, but that's where I found everything that I'm going to show you today, most of what I'm going to talk about. There is also a lot of deception. There is layer and layer upon layer upon layer of misinformation, disinformation, just plain old ordinary bullshit, and a lot of other things to get in your way. So wading through that can sometimes be difficult. You have to use your gut feeling. You have to use your common sense. You have to dig. But it's important that you learn to do that. For those of you who are here for the first time today, let me give you some background of who I am so that I won't be some mysterious character up here rattling off information which may or may not be true. I was reared in a military family. My father was a command pilot in the United States Air Force. He is a retired lieutenant colonel. He lives in the state of Texas now. A command pilot means that he literally has flown aircraft for thousands of hours and he's still alive. He started in biplanes and he ended up in jets. When I was a child, I can remember, I think I scrambled through every airplane that the Air Force and the Army Air Force ever had when I was a child. My dad used to take me out of the flight line to see these planes. I've flown in many of them. I used to eavesdrop on the pilots when they sat around the kitchen table and talk about UFOs and Foo Fighters and dogfights and things that went wrong with their airplanes and everything that you can think of until they would get sick of me and my brother and sister and send us out in the yard to play. And then we would play what we heard. When I left home, I was reared all over the world. We lived on Air Force bases in foreign countries. When I left home, I went into the Air Force. I was in the Strategic Air Command. I worked on B-52 bombers, KC-135 refueling aircraft, and Minuteman missiles as an aircraft and missile hydraulic technician. In the Air Force, of course, you have to understand, I was a young man at that time. Went in when I was 18. I spent 4 years in. I got out when I was 22, and I met sergeants, people who were over me, but who I became friends with, who sometimes after about 10 or 12 beers would begin to tell me the most incredible stories that I'd ever heard in my life about having participated in teams of Air Force personnel who recovered crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. Now, you got to understand, if they'd already had 10 or 12 beers, so had I. That's the first thing you've got to know. Second, you have to understand that after 10 or 12 beers at the age of 21, I wasn't interested in extraterrestrial crash spacecraft. I was interested in the girl and the girl at the other end of the bar. So I didn't pay too much attention to all of this, and you could never get these guys to talk about it when they were sober. And you still can today. And in fact, today it's much more difficult because they have means that they have perfected of mind control and memory erasure to where now some people who work in very top secret projects don't even know what they work on. They know that they go to work in the morning, they get off of work and go home, they don't remember anything that they did all day. The technology for this is well documented. It's in the public domain also, and it's one way that they've figured out how to keep projects secret. If you don't believe that the military can keep things secret, consider this. You just recently heard of the stealth fighter for the first time. This is 1991. I think the first mention of it publicly was in 1990. Did anyone hear of the stealth fighter before 1990? What year did you hear?
Early 80s.
Early 80s? Anybody like to venture a in the early 70s, ladies and gentlemen, Earth's stealth fighter flew. So that's pretty good secret keeping. They can and do keep secrets for many, many, many years, and nobody knows about it. Now, I can tell you this for sure. If they have revealed publicly the existence of the stealth fighter, they have something else that's secret that makes that look like a tinker toy. That's the way these things go. When I left the Air Force, I went into the United States Navy. I had originally wanted to go into the Navy. I love the ocean. I love ships. I love the water. I was a wonderful swimmer. I only had one problem. I got terribly seasick when I just looked at a boat. So that's why I really went into the Air Force. But when I left the Air Force and had not satisfied my sense of adventure, I still loved the ocean. I still wanted to go in the Navy, so I did. And I volunteered for submarines. I was stationed aboard the USS Tyru, USS 416, stationed at the Pearl Harbor submarine base. It was an old World War II diesel boat. When I reported aboard, it was in the shipyard and had been cut in half. And you could imagine my chagrin, being new to the Navy and standing on the edge of a dry dock looking at a submarine cut cleanly in half, knowing that I'm going to have to go underwater on this thing. I really didn't like the thought of that. Everything was rusty. Everybody was welding everywhere. It looked like a dead grasshopper covered with ants. Well, what they did was they inserted a 12-foot section, which became a pretty sophisticated sonar facility, compartment, and put three domes on the deck so that we could triangulate targets. And when this was done, we could actually compete with some of the best nuclear submarines in being able to track and kill a target. In fact, I remember thinking at times how easy it was to detect submarines and keep them from getting near an aircraft carrier and then becoming a crew member on this submarine and surfacing within 100 yards of the carrier, not having been detected until we broke water. Now, to me, that was incredible, because that meant that the carrier was dead. I mean, if it had been wartime, we could have sunk that carrier very easily. I was acquainted with the state-of-the-art of aircraft technology. I was acquainted with not the state-of-the-art, but I knew what it took to go underwater and survive. It was while on this submarine as the port lookout on the transit between the Portland-Seattle area. We had been up there for the Rose Festival as a showboat, really. People came down and toured through the sub. We met a lot of girls and had some really neat dates, and then we left. And about one-third of the way back from the Portland-Seattle area to Pearl Harbor, I was the port lookout. We were on the surface doing about 10 knots when off the port bow I saw, and I was the only one that saw it, a huge flying disc the size of an aircraft carrier come up out of the water, tumble on its axis, and disappear into the clouds. Well, needless to say, I was stunned, literally speechless. I started to say something, but couldn't talk. Nobody else had seen it, and I knew that they weren't about to believe what I had seen if I told them. And it scared me a little bit, too, because I had never believed in these things, even though I had heard stories about them all my life. And I didn't see your little run-of-the-mill 30-foot flying saucer. I saw something as big as an aircraft carrier. But I had a duty to report this, because it could have meant a danger to the vessel. My duty was to the vessel and to the crew. But I wasn't about to tell the officer of the deck that I'd seen the flying saucer. So I told him, his name was Ensign Ball, I told him that I had seen something off the port bow at a relative bearing of approximately 15 degrees. Would he help me find it because I've lost it? And you work that way on the bridge of a ship. You work as a team. Everybody helps everybody else out. Since the lookout can't leave the station, officers very often bring in coffee. Well, he looked over there, and the starboard lookout had also heard what I said, and he looked over there, too. the thing happened, there was no splash. It was as if the open ocean opened up ahead of it, and then it went into the hole, which closed behind it. Now, this sounds incredible. And to tell you quite truthfully, it is incredible. And if somebody had told me that and I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't believe it. And I would blame any one of you for not believing it. But I hope before this day is over, you're going to at least consider the possibility that these things exist, because I'm going to show you some real film, pictures, and documents, government documentation, and we're going to talk about a lot of other things that are going on. It's extremely important that people get out of the stuck-in-the-mud, narrow view frame of mind. I can tell you that over the last 17 to 18 years that I've been doing research, I have discovered that our normal, everyday concept of reality is an illusion. It is a manipulation in most instances of the power structure that really runs this country and the world to keep us ignorant so that we won't know what the truth is. I can tell you that when George Bush says, out of the Middle East crisis will come a new world order, he is not joking. And the new world order is not what you think it is. Friendly nations working together. It's going to be a one world, totalitarian, socialist government. Some of the reasons for this are good. Some of them are not. I can tell you that there is a hidden secret technology that is astounding, resembles nothing less than sheer magic, would literally set us free, enable us to cure most diseases, if not all, give us probably a source of, if not free energy, very close to free energy, very inexpensive energy, which we need very badly. And I'm going to talk to you why these things are being hidden, when this all came about, and try to give you a basic understanding of what's going on. All of it's covered in my book, which you may or may not have seen. The name of the book is Behold a Pale Horse. This book has more suppressed information printed in it than any other book that's ever been printed in the history of the world, I can guarantee you. And if they don't succeed in suppressing it, a lot of people's eyes are going to be wide open when they read it. Everything that I have found, I document. So it's not a question of deciding whether or not to believe me. It's a question of whether or not you can accept those documents as proof. Someone once said, you could put 10 tons of proof in front of people. If they're not ready to accept an idea, they will not accept the proof. No amount of evidence will suffice to prove anything. It is the jury that will decide. And you are the jury. Smart people know that. After having gone through this experience on the bridge of the submarine, I was later told by the captain that we were not to discuss this, not even amongst ourselves. I'd never been told that in the military. I'd never heard of anything like that. People who worked on projects together usually discussed them amongst themselves together. Now, when we reached Pearl Harbor, those of us who had been on the bridge, including the captain, were not allowed to go to shore. An officer and commander from the Office of Naval Intelligence came on board, spoke with each one of us in the captain's stateroom individually, and literally what happened is he did not tell us what to say. But every time we said the wrong thing, we were threatened. We were yelled at. It didn't take me long to figure out, having been raised by an Air Force officer and having spent 4 years in the United States Air Force, what this man wanted to hear. So I told him what he wanted to hear. Sir, I didn't see anything. I want to get the hell out of here real quick. Please, let's get this over with. That pleased him. I then was given several pieces of paper to read, which literally all said basically the same thing using different words. They were different rules, regulations, and laws governing the safeguard of information pertaining to the national security. And then I had to sign a security oath saying that I would never talk about what it was that I had just told this gentleman that I had not seen. And then I was allowed to go. Later I was selected and trained for naval security and intelligence. I was given a secondary NEC of 9545, which is internal security specialist. My job was to safeguard, control classified information, secure perimeters, buildings, naval installations, detect bugging devices, all of these things. I was specifically trained to conduct Pacific area intelligence briefings. And then after all this training, I was sent to Vietnam and made a patrol boat captain for naval security and intelligence. I was attached to Camp Carter, which was the headquarters of naval intelligence and I Corps. I was then sent to a division of naval intelligence, which was the Da Nang Harbor Patrol. I was given a crew, a patrol boat, and a lot of weapons and ammunition, and they turned me loose. And that was crazy, because I was a young man that didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I did okay, thank God. Some others didn't. Later, I was transferred up to the Dong Ha River Security Group, which was another division of Camp Carter Naval Intelligence. And my job there was to patrol the river, make friends with the people along the banks, gather intelligence, and maintain the safety and security of the river. That river was at the DMZ, it's the Ta Khan River. The base camp was Qua Viet, at the mouth of the river on the southern bank. And it was a major supply route for supplies that went to Khe San, which was under siege. While there, I learned that there was significant UFO activity in Vietnam. A lot. Why? I don't know. There were rumors flying everywhere. We heard stories of enemy troops firing at UFOs, our side firing at UFOs, UFOs flashing back with blue lights that did crazy things. The same things that you hear happening today. I know of one instance for a fact that after UFOs hovered above a South Vietnamese village all night, the next morning there was not a living soul in that village. Don't ask me where they went because I haven't got the slightest idea. But it's incredible. We were told that any UFO information that we sent in dispatches, messages, or discussed over the radio, we were to use the code word enemy helicopter activity. And that's what we did. The enemy had no helicopters in Vietnam, period. So anything you see in the history of Vietnam that refers to enemy helicopter activity is in fact referring to UFO activity, unidentified flying objects. When I left Vietnam, I was sent to the USS Charles Berry D-1035 for a short period with NIS Naval Investigative Service to conduct an investigation on board that vessel. 3 months later, I left, was transferred to the staff of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, who at that time was Admiral Bernard Clary, and was specifically attached to his intelligence briefing team. I also stood watches. In the Navy, you have a primary job. Some people don't know this, so let me explain it. In the Navy, you have a primary job, which you do. You also have to stand additional duty, which is called watches in the Navy. My watch station was Petty Officer of the Watch in the Command Center, which meant I was the senior enlisted man in the Command Center, in charge of the Command Center and the information. I was also the designated speak-out operator, which meant top secret crypto communications that came in under a specialized, compartmentalized category. I was the only one on watch who was allowed to handle that information and direct it to the specific place where it was to go. Now, normally these things are handled by radio men and communications technicians in a communications center. But in a command center where they have to have information instantly, everything that goes to the communications center also comes was there that I saw documentation that I have to tell you right now could have been shown to me or given to me, or I could have been put in that position in order to see these documents so that I would specifically talk about them later. I'll tell you why in just a few moments that that might have occurred. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that the information that I saw was real, was accurate, and is occurring. The documents stated that extraterrestrials were real, that UFOs were piloted by them and had been visiting this Earth for many, many thousands of years, that there was a project called Aquarius that had researched this history and compiled the history from written human records, starting with the ancient tablets left by the Sumerians, the Assyrians, the Mesopotamians, the Egyptians, right up to modern times. These documents were quite thorough and very convincing, believe me. There was documentation that the United States had actually recovered crashed alien craft. The first one occurred near a small town called Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. The crash site actually covered two locations. One location was on a ranch belonging to a Mr. Brazel. The other location was approximately 60 miles from there, where the main bulk of the craft had come down, from which they had removed three dead alien bodies. I saw photographs of these bodies, I saw photographs of the autopsies, and I saw photographs of the internal organs of these beings. It stated that in 1949 another crash had occurred, also in New Mexico, from which they had recovered more bodies, and that they had found one live alien creature wandering in the desert. Now you have to understand, just because I saw these documents doesn't mean that all of this actually occurred. These could have been presented to me to make me believe that this had occurred. It stated that they had kept this live alien in captivity until June 2nd, 1952, at which time he died of unknown causes. They instituted a project called Sigma to attempt to contact the race that this being belonged to. Sigma evolved into the National Security Agency. That eventually contact was made. Landings occurred, communication took place, an alliance was agreed upon. This actually was supposedly happened at Muroc, which is now known as Edwards Air Force Base in California, in 1954. President Eisenhower was on vacation at that time in Palm Springs. During this time, you can see by reading the newspapers that he disappeared. Newspapers went crazy. Reporters were combing the countryside looking for the president. They were told that he had suffered a toothache and had flown by helicopter to a dentist. Well, this was not true. The true place where he was taken was Muroc, Edwards Air Force Base. The base was closed. This is also on record for 3 days. No one could go in, no one could come out. There are witness accounts that say three unidentified flying objects flew over Edwards Air Force Base and landed. We have a letter, which I'm going to show you later, from Mr. Gerald Blight, who states that he was there when President Eisenhower was there. He saw the ships. He saw these creatures. And that's just the beginning, but I'm not going to go much farther than that right now. We're going to get into some documentation so that your disbelief can start to see that this is not as incredible as it sounds. And I know what some of you must be sitting there thinking. It wasn't too long ago, I should have been thinking the same thing. Now, over the years, if this is real, it's been suppressed and covered up and hidden for very good reasons in the beginning. Reasons that don't stand up now. Reasons that have resulted in criminal activity, in erosion of the Constitution, in all kinds of things. Now, I said that I believe that this is all true. I don't believe that it's a hoax. The evidence is overwhelming that it's true. And by overwhelming, I mean exactly that. When you get into really investigating this, looking at it, the evidence will overwhelm you. It is incredible that such a cover-up has been able to be maintained for so long. On the other hand, I have found references as far back as the beginning of this century by a secret group of very powerful people to create an artificial alien threat from some other planet to help unite all humanity into a one-world government with them at the head. I have found a speech given by John Dewey in 1917 to Viscount Ishiki and the Japanese delegation in New York City, where the first thing that he says in his speech is, "Someone once told me that the best way to unite all humanity and do away with war is if we were attacked from some other planet by alien beings from outer space." I have found reference in a report called The Report from Iron Mountain to the ultimate method of permanent peace on this earth and uniting humanity, doing away with nation states which cause wars, and substituting for war a tremendously wasteful space program that would unite humanity against an alien threat of an intelligent race from another planet. Now, I didn't know all this when I saw these papers back between 1970 and 1973 and the photographs and the records that I saw. This information came out during my research over the last 18 years. So it's something that has to be considered. I have to tell you that the intelligence communities, the powerful people in this world, have the capabilities to do this. To perpetrate such a hoax. They can do it. They have methods and ways to make us believe damn near anything they want to. But I will tell you this. The only question is whether extraterrestrials are real or not. There is no question whatsoever about the craft. The craft are real. They've been seen by millions of people all over the world. Credible people, military people, doctors, lawyers, bag ladies, elevator repairmen, people who work in grocery stores, heads of colleges, politicians, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and many others. Now, Jimmy Carter said he saw a UFO before he was elected president. Now, if he's not credible, why did you elect him? If we can send a man to the gas chamber or the electric chair on the testimony of two witnesses in court, why won't you believe millions of people who are telling you that they have seen these craft flying in the air, that they're metal, that they are intelligently guided, that they are real, and that they demonstrated technology beyond anything that we know of publicly anyway? I can tell you that we have this technology in the United States. It is being flown in an area called Area 51, Groom Dry Lake, in the Nevada Test Range in the state of Nevada. I have seen it fly. Many other people have seen it fly. I have a photograph of it in my book. I also have a drawing given to me by one of the people who have been there and touched it and seen it. The drawing matches the craft in flight exactly. I'm also going to show you a videotape of another craft, what they call a cigar-shaped craft, above the test site here in just a few moments. So, when you hear people talking about secret weapons, when you see the stealth fighter unveiled, what they have behind it in the wings, that you too can also go see, by the way, in Nevada, if you have the money and the time to go out there and stand in the desert all night. If you look toward Groom Lake between sunset and sunrise on any given night, you can watch them test fly these craft. But this time to show you that I'm not so far out in left field that you could turn it off. I'm going to show you a tape now, and this tape is going to prove to you that the government's been lying to you for a lot of years. Now, when I say the government, I don't mean our constitutionally authorized and legal and lawful government. I mean the men who have infiltrated our government over the years and are controlling it, subverting it toward their own end, have been lying to us. Our government hadn't had a chance to work over the last 40 years. And you're going to see why. What I'm going to show you is a tape of the Kennedy assassination. It's not a tape that you've ever seen before. I hope you will pardon the editing because I'm not a professional editor and I have to do this at home because I cannot let this tape out of my possession because that would be totally irresponsible and it would probably disappear. Keep your eyes on the driver of the car. Do not watch Kennedy. Don't look around at the scenery. Keep your eyes on the driver of the car. That's important. They have always known who killed Kennedy, and they have covered it up for all these years. Okay, we have the lights off, and please run the Kennedy tape. While I was with the Office of Naval Intelligence attached to the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet staff, I saw documents that stated with no hesitation whatsoever, with clear understanding, that President Kennedy was killed by William Greer, the Secret Service agent driving his limousine in the motorcade. These documents disclosed to me that the people involved in the assassination of the President were the Office of Naval Intelligence, the Secret Service, Division 5 of the FBI, and the Central Intelligence Agency. The reason stated was that he was a security risk, that he had ordered them to stop the sale and importation of drugs to the American people, and that he had ordered them to develop a plan to disclose the presence of extraterrestrial visitation to this earth within the following year. He had also ordered a printing of legally constitutional silver-backed money, which is not in the best interest of the world bankers or the power structure or the Federal Reserve, which is not an agency of the federal government, but is a private corporation run, and the stock is held and owned by bankers, most of whom are European bankers controlled by the House of Rothschild. They pay no taxes on the national debt that we pay them and the money that they earn from the interest. So they were dead set against the printing of this money. Kennedy had also discovered what the CIA had been doing for many years. You see, being president, you get to open a lot of drawers that nobody usually gets to open. And he had informed the CIA that he had intended, and he said this publicly, by the way, that he intended to disband the CIA and scatter it in 1,000 different directions. So you see, he made some pretty big enemies. And there were some pretty powerful people who thought that he needed to be killed. Many of you saw this or found this out for the first time today. How many of you are upset by this? I am. I have been, ever since I saw those documents, I've been terribly upset. In fact, in my book, I enclosed parts of my service record in the appendix. You can see the exact day that I found out that the Office of Naval Intelligence was involved in the assassination of President Kennedy. I went over the hill with no intention of coming back. It was my good friend Robert Swan who talked me into returning so that I can do what I'm doing today. He said, Bill, you can't help anybody if you're in jail and that's where you're going if you don't go
1971 when I saw the document that told me who killed President Kennedy. Let's take about a 5 minute break. Let's take a 10 minute break.
Bobby, the UFO, you're not going to want to miss this because it's extremely rare footage of what they call a mothership, a cigar-shaped craft. I meant to say this in the beginning, but forgot all about it. For those of you who have ordered my book, all the paperback books that were ordered have been sent. They've been sent for over a week, so if you ordered it and haven't got it, it's probably in your mailbox right this moment waiting for you to come home, or will be there in the next couple of days. The hardback books are printed, but they are not bound yet. They will not be sent for another 2 weeks. Gotten to the bottom very quickly. And that is that some people are coming forward and telling us that they're being abducted by alien beings and taken aboard their spacecraft. They're literally helpless. They can't move. Their clothes are taken off. They're given medical examination. Some people are operated upon. Samples of their tissue is taken. Sometimes sperm and ova is harvested. Sometimes females are impregnated. It's all medical fact that these things are happening. It is not a joke. The only question is, was it really aliens and were they really taken into a spacecraft, or did something else happen and this is a planted story that's been put in their mind to disguise it? You see, this is a classic thing that they do in brainwashing. If they want to cover something up, they just put a different memory in your mind. Now that sounds difficult, sounds impossible, but if you go read the books that have been published by people who participated in mind control experimentation, and the documents that have been released under the Freedom of Information Act, this is not a joke. They can do it, have done it, and will do it again in the future. Now, if this is a hoax, if it's the biggest hoax that's ever been perpetrated in the history of the world, in order to create an alien threat from outer space in the consciousness of humanity so that we'll accept the elimination of the sovereignty of nations, the destruction of our Constitution, and we'll accept a one-world government wherein we may not have the freedoms that we have now, in order to face this alien threat together as one humanity. If it's a hoax, that means we're being manipulated on the grandest scale in history, that people are being hurt, that their minds are being screwed with. And if this is happening, we have to find out if it's really happening. We have to be able to gather enough facts to prove it, and we've got to stop it. If, on the other hand, these are really extraterrestrials that are doing these things, we have to find out why. Because these people are being implanted with very small devices, about the size of a small BB, that are literally microchips in the brain. What is the purpose? I don't know. Can these people be controlled through these implants? I'm going to show you the locations where these implants are put into the brain. They're easily detected by MIR CAT scan, by anybody who is a medical professional adept at identifying foreign bodies in the human body. So, aside from the obvious reasons why we should be looking into it, those are some of the other reasons why we should be looking into it. If the New World Order is so benevolent and so good for us, why is it that we have to be coerced and manipulated into it? Because this isn't the only coercion that's going on, if that's what's happening. Now I'm going to preface what I'm going to say next, because I'm going to talk about the war in the Middle East for a few minutes. I'm going to preface what I'm going to say next with this statement. I was in the military. I'm a veteran. I support the Constitution and the government of the United States of America and will fight anyone who attempts to overthrow it or destroy it. I am for our troops in the Middle East. I am for them. I hope that not a one of them gets killed. And as long as we're engaged in battle, I hope that we win. But I'm going to tell you right now, we are not there for the reasons that you've been told. And let me give you a little history of this. Number one, George Bush comes on television and tells you that we have to send troops to the Middle East because Hussein wants to raise the price of oil and we can't afford that. That's what he said. It's on tape. It's documented. Next, he says, oh, it wasn't the oil that we sent the troops there for. It's because Hussein was not going to stop with Kuwait. He was going to go into Saudi Arabia. We're there for defensive purposes. People questioned that. The next statement came from Baker, James Baker, the Secretary of State, who said, we're not there for oil, we're not there for to defend Kuwait, it's jobs. We're there for jobs. Then at a press conference, Bush said, and I quote, some people just don't get the message. It's not oil. It's not to defend Saudi Arabia. And it's not jobs. We're there to prevent this kind of naked aggression. Now, I submit to you that if the President of the United States and Secretary of State don't know why the hell we're there and they change their mind every minute, that none of the above is true. The truth is, a legal precedent has to be established that says that the United Nations is the ruler of the world. It has to be a legal precedent that all nation states submit to the will of the United Nations and give up their sovereignty to the United Nations and submit to the rule of the law of the world, which is the United Nations Charter and the resolutions passed by the United Nations. And the United States military is acting as the police force for the United Nations to establish that legal precedent. And Bush has said on television, no nation can ever again stand against a world united. And if they try it, the same thing will happen to them. Margaret Thatcher was the last world leader who was opposed to the one world government. And she is no longer the Prime Minister of England because of that. I'm going to tell you now that the only obstacle to the New World Order coming together at this moment is the right of the American people to keep and bear arms. That is why there is such an effort to take your guns away from you. You see, the intent of the Second Amendment, the Second Article and Amendment to the Constitution, was not so that we could go hunting. It was not to protect the possessions in your home or to protect you from burglars. The intent of our forefathers in establishing the Second Article and Amendment to the Constitution was that as long as every American owned a weapon, whether they ever fired it or not, our government could never oppress us just with the knowledge that we all had that weapon in our closet. That's the reason. That's why every time you see a bill to take weapons, weapons away from the American people, defeated in Congress, four more are introduced immediately. It's a never-ending battle. That's why they lie about the statistics. The truth is, in a town where everybody owns a weapon and everybody knows it, there is almost no crime. I'm going to show you this next videotape while you're thinking about that, to show you that these craft do in fact exist. This was taken above the Nevada test site. This is what's called a cigar-shaped craft. They are very large. They're also called motherships. Every time they're seen, except in this photograph, usually you see other smaller craft exiting and entering these craft, like scout ships or something. I don't know what you would call it. But it's absolutely incredible. This piece of footage you're going to see is so rare. I've only seen one other piece of film footage on this particular type of vehicle, and it wasn't even one-third as good as what you're going to see here. So what you're going to see is extremely rare, and you'll probably be a long time before you ever see any footage like this again. It's very difficult to get. Go ahead, there's no sound.
All this was recorded in February 1991.